I get to introduce our next guests, who's going to be presenting to us today about shepherding your family, Mike and Kathleen Self. How many of you know Mike and Kathleen? All right, there's a lot of you. If Sprouts is your connection here with River West and in this community here, then you may not have had the privilege yet, and we're so glad that you get to meet them today. Mike and Kathleen are both on staff here at River West. Mike is the pastor of family life, and Kathleen is River West Kids director, coordinator, basically anything that happens with kids, Kathleen has her hand on. VBS in the summertime, these guys are the mastermind behind it all. But even more than that, Mike and Kathleen are just, they have been mentors and friends of my husband and I for years here at River West. They have two almost grown kids. Maddie is at Baylor University as a freshman, and Mason is at Westland as a junior, hopefully going to college, right, at some point. But they have just poured into this community, poured into marriages, poured into families and kids, and today we get to hear from them about parenting and shepherding our families. So come on up, and I'll just pray for your time, if you will. Yeah, you can. Let's clap for him. Dear Jesus, thank you so much for Mike and Kathleen. I really am so grateful for just this incredible couple that gives so much of themselves away and just in every way gives you away. And so I pray that you would be with them. Thank you for how they've prepared. Thank you that they get to do it together. And we just pray that you would use their words and everything you've put on their hearts to just sink into our lives. In your name, amen.
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 Thanks.
Wait, how much time do we have? When do we got to wrap up?
40, 45.
Okay.
All right, well, thanks so much for having us this morning. We're excited to share with you, and we thought we would introduce our family. Jamie kind of already mentioned just our kids, but they're, yeah, Maddie, our daughter, 19 at Baylor, and Mason, 16, junior at Westland. And we've been at River West for, almost 12 years now, and we love being a part of this community. We feel like God has just put us here, and we are really thankful about it.
Thank you for the opportunity to share. It really means a lot. It's really fun to be able to do this. Here's a question that I love to ask. Anytime we have the opportunity to visit with parents, I always ask this question. I want you to reflect back and just think about your childhood. I want you to think about your parents and how you were raised. And I want you to raise your hand. If you had these amazing parents and they set such a wonderful model for you, and you're thinking, okay, if I could parent just as half as well as my parents did, that would be fantastic. How many of you fall into that category? My parents nailed it. Awesome. Oh, that's a lot. Okay, that's great. All right. How about on the other end of the spectrum? When you think about your childhood, you think about your parents, and you're thinking, no way. All right, they did this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go in a completely different direction. How many of you fall into that category? Okay, that's a lot too. Okay, the rest of us are probably somewhere in the middle where you think about your parents and maybe you're really thankful on one hand, but maybe they really disappointed you or let you down on another hand. Like, that would be my experience with my parents. Raise your hand if you're somewhere in between those two. Okay. And one of the things that's really important to recognize is that we all have a model for our parenting. Like, your parents, whether they realize it or not, your parents had a model for how they were parenting you. And there's a fantastic curriculum book series written by Dr. Tim Kimmel called Grace-Based Parenting. I love that curriculum. But he looks at it a couple different ways. And again, I want you to raise your hand if you think this fits you. And this is actually something you're going to discuss in your small groups later. So as far as models go, again, your parents probably weren't thinking they had this particular model, but this is how they did it. Number one is fear-based parenting, where parents looked at the world and they were more fearful of the world, had more fear than they did faith. And that's a really small, you know, that's a hard, isolating way to live. Did anyone grow up in a fear-based home? Okay, a couple. Also, there's image control parenting, and this is the home I grew up in. Everything had to look good. Even if it wasn't, it had to look good. Like, maybe inside our home, it could be chaos, but outside of the home, as far as anyone else was concerned, we looked like we were killing it. How many would fall into that category? Okay. Then there's high control parenting. That's where it's just rules, rules, rules. Again, some of that comes from fear, where you're just, you know, trying to just hold on so tightly. You know, that's the helicopter mom, you know, type model. But high control. How many of you guys had a high control environment? Okay. And then there's the herd mentality. Like, you don't really have any kind of plan, so you're just going to do what everyone else is doing. Like, if your parents are going that way and these parents are going that way, like, there's, all right, we'll just do that. Did anyone kind of just feel like every other month there was a new parenting model in their home? Like, the latest book. My parents read this book, so we're going to do this now. And then there's one called duct tape parenting. That's not being proactive. That's more reactive. You're just trying to fix things as they go. Did anyone grow up in that kind of chaotic environment? Yeah, a couple people did. That would be really hard. And maybe it's a combination of a lot of these things. I mean, they all kind of blend together as well. But I think the best model, you know, is a grace-based model, this idea that we need to love our children the same way that God loves us. With this incredible amount of grace. It doesn't mean there aren't rules. Of course, there's rules that keep us safe and guide us and protect us, but it's not legalistic, okay? It's not licensed. It's not legalistic. It's somewhere in between. And I think you have to have a plan. I mean, the best parenting is intentional parenting, really thinking about what you're going to do. And I do know that a lot of things that we're talking about are going to be maybe not the stage you're in right now with your children, which you're in the brutal stage. I mean, this is so hard. I mean, just the idea of going back freaks me out. And you think you're going to be in it forever, but when you start looking ahead, that's what we're going to be talking about, things, it's kind of these next stages. And we want you to be very intentional in how you're parenting.
So we had the opportunity about a year ago to write a curriculum for our sister church in Bujesera, Rwanda. And African New Life asked Mike and I to come speak last summer to the parents there. They just don't have a lot of parent training. So we were really honored and nervous to go over there and present. So the last couple of months, we've taken that curriculum and we've tried to just revamp it for here. And in March, we're going to do a two-part class at the Sunday night service. And today we thought we would give you just a little taste of what that curriculum is. So if you want to, if you see those handouts, if you guys want to turn to page 4, this is the verse that we've really based the curriculum on. It's a passage out of 1 Peter, which is kind of fun because that's what we're studying in the river. So it's neat that we already have studied this passage. But all right, I'm going to read it real quick. It's in orange there on 4. It says, "So I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory." You know, and even though this is not written specifically to parents, it's addressed to the elders, I think it does give a great model for parenting, and there's lots of truths I think we're going to pick out of it. So, because we're all called to shepherd our children. So if you look over at the outline on page 5, we're just doing a teeny part. We're going to look at number 1 of part 1, leading our children. But in the class later in March, if today kind of speaks to you, you could maybe look at joining us for the class. But so leading our children.
And so, obviously, the mindset of being a shepherd, if you think about it, there's so much shepherd imagery in Scripture. I mean, it's really, really rich with that, and it's beautiful. I mean, that's the kind of person I would want to be. I want to shepherd the people God places in my care. So, clearly, that is us as parents shepherding our children, because God has placed them in our care. And so, this curriculum is also set up, like, there's some fill-in-the-blanks. If you want to follow along, you can. And the very first blank right here on page number 6 is, shepherd parents must lead their children. You are the leaders of your home. And somewhere along the line, maybe going back 20, 30 years ago, there has been a cultural shift where more and more it has become the children have become the leaders of the home. And the children are kind of dictating life as a family. And again, I recognize the stage you're in right now. Your world is your kids. I get that. But as they get older, you have to make sure you're the one providing key leadership. It's not the church. It's not the school. It's you. And I kind of think of it, you know, there's this 18-year timeline. You know, there's a clock that's ticking. And I know not every child leaves the home at 18, but you have 18 years, basically, all right, to lead, to love, to serve, to equip your kids before they go off on their own, be it, you know, to college or something else. There's a clock, and it's ticking. And I think we need to take advantage of the time that we have. So another way to look at it is we must enculturate our kids. You know, whatever is important to you, that needs to be important to your kids. You know, the kind of character qualities that you want to develop in your kids, and the things that you want to model for your kids, if it's important to you, it needs to be important for your kids. And somewhere down the line, again, there's been a shift where we look too much at what the kids want, and kids are kids. They're not going to make wise, good decisions. And sometimes it sounds empowering when you say, we're going to let our children make the decision. Like, we're going to let them, you know, have to wrestle with something. That's great when they're older, but not when they're younger. And so I think that's important for us to provide key leadership. And, you know, I know we dream, we think about, you know, what our kids might do one day for a job or what their career would be. But what's way more important is to think about what kind of person your child will be, regardless of their career. And so what we're going to do this morning, there's eight key character qualities. And, you know, six of these come from the grace-based parenting model that I already shared with you, that book Dr. Tim Kimmel wrote. But we've added two more. But we're going to walk through these because these are the things we think are so important, so foundational, that our children need to own. It needs to be a part of who they are, okay? So number one is faith. Our children need a decisive and specific faith in Christ to guide their lives. Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we cannot see. Faith becomes a character trait when it starts to determine the decisions our children make. All right, we want to develop our faith, a faith in our children. It's a faith in God. It is not a faith in themselves. And that is so culturally, that's what we do. I cringe when I see things like this. Believing in yourself is the secret to success. I don't think that's a biblical idea. Believe in yourself and you will be unstoppable. I don't think that's true. If you believe in yourself, anything is possible. I think that's a lie. You know, when we tell our kids that, I just don't believe that's true. You can't do everything or anything, just if you believe it strongly enough, and then always believe in yourself. I think that is dangerous. It's really dangerous if you're always believing in yourselves. Our hearts will lead us astray, all right? We have to have a bigger faith. And then this one, don't stop believing in yourself no matter what happens. That is horrible advice. We need a faith in God, someone bigger, stronger, someone who loves us more than we could ever comprehend, calling the shots in our lives. And so developing that faith means, okay, we believe in what God says to be true, not what I manufacture as truth. Believing that my life will be better if I live according to his plan and his purposes. That's where the faith comes in. And if you're not developing that faith in your kids, of a faith in God, what will happen is they'll start looking to their peers, they'll start looking just to culture, and they're placing their faith in very fragile places, not healthy places. So.
All right, the next page, integrity. It says, our children need a strong commitment to integrity if they are to honor God. Integrity is who you are at your core when no one is looking. It means doing the right thing, even if there are consequences for doing the right thing. It's being honest and trustworthy with our words and actions. So, I know this is obvious, but it's important to start talking about integrity and honest when our kids are young. And I think it starts with how we're modeling it. And I like to ask myself these questions as Maddie and Mason were getting older. Like, am I modeling honesty just in my daily conversations? Like, do I exaggerate the truth? Am I stretching the truth to kind of make myself look better or to make a situation seem better? Kids pick up on that. They notice. And I would get called out, like, Mom, that's not exactly how that happened. When you were retelling that story, you know, and it's like, okay, you're right. Do we honor our commitments? You know, we want our kids to know that our word means something. And is your yes, yes, and your no, no? Do you follow through with things? Again, if we're modeling these things, your kids will pick up on it, and then they'll learn it for themselves. Do we stand for what is right, even when it's not popular? You know, in your families, you'll come up with boundaries and rules that you feel like are right for your family, and you'll pray about them, and you'll see where is God leading us, and it'll be things like TV or later on cell phone, you know, and you'll figure out what is the right thing for our family. And it might not look like your kids' friends' families, what they are doing. And sometimes it's hard, you know, when you've got a group of kids and they all want to watch something, and you have to kind of stand for what you've
said is right for your family. And to stick with that, I think, takes integrity. And then you look for those teachable moments. You look for the times when your kids are really being honest or standing up for something, and you praise them for that, and you talk about it, and then you call them out when they're not being honest. And I was trying to think of an example when our kids were young, and I thought about Mason. This is probably when he was 5 or 6 years old. There he is when he was little. We put him to bed. You know, we prayed for him, read the story. We're out in the living room. You know, when the kids are in bed, you're like, just feels good to be with your husband. And sitting out in the living room, and I don't know, a few minutes later, Mace comes out, just big eyes, big tears, just with this huge confession to, like, unleash on us. And he's like, I didn't brush my teeth when I told you I brushed my teeth. And we're like, buddy, why didn't you brush your teeth? And he's like, I really haven't been brushing them for a long time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how did I not notice this? And then we sat him down and talked about the oral hygiene piece of it. You know, we're like, it's important to take care of our bodies. We need our teeth to last, and we've got to, you know, we need strong, healthy teeth. It's important to brush them. But then I remember, I think it was Mike that said, the bigger issue here is your honesty. It's the fact that you lied to us. That's really what we're more concerned about. I mean, the teeth are important, but it's the honesty piece. And we just said, you know, we want you to be a boy that grows up to be an older boy that people can trust, and eventually a man that people can trust. And to be trustworthy is really, really important. It's going to be important as you lead and as you are in your future job and as you're you're leading a family. And I just remember, I mean, he just was soaking it in, but that was a teachable moment, you know, to talk about, like, the silly thing that him not brushing his teeth. I mean, it's kind of a big deal, but the honesty was the bigger piece. And so that would be an example of us trying to highlight what was really important.
Okay, the next character quality is poise. And this is something that is just, it's not talked about at all. That's one of my favorite things to talk about, being poised. I think it is a superpower because so few people live this way. And here's how we define it. It says, poise means having a keen, and I love that word keen, poise means having a keen sense of the appropriate in every situation. Possessing poise results in a gentle strength that enables people to navigate the extremes of life. And so often kids live in extremes. You know, they're way over here, they're way over here. And having them have a model where they know how to respond in any given situation, they know how to respond, they know who to be, they know what's expected of them, and not allowing that crazy, crazy, crazy behavior. And this is the mental image when I think about poise, like living in that sweet spot. It's an egg in a vise. You know, too much pressure, it's going to crack, okay? Not enough pressure, that egg's going to fall out and it's going to crack. So being poised, it's that perfect sweet spot, all right? It's knowing how to keep your cool. And I work with a lot of kids, and I don't see a lot of kids keeping their cool or knowing how to respond, or if they do respond, they respond inappropriately because no one has taught them or modeled for them, you know, what appropriate behavior they should have. And I really do mean that when I say it is a superpower. And it takes a lot of self-discipline, and it takes a lot of knowing what a situation calls for. But I think those are the kids that, I mean, other people are really attracted to. Because I see there's a confidence. I love this part right here. It's a gentle strength that allows them to navigate the extremes of life. And I think for us as parents, especially, like, we have to model that. And I can think of times when I've totally lost my cool in front of my kids, and I hate that, all right? So I want to make sure I'm living in that position. And the ultimate model for this is Jesus. Like, I love, if you look at the scriptures, I mean, Jesus was always perfectly poised. It did not matter what he faced, if it was something with the disciples or the Pharisees, going head-to-head with the demon. I mean, Jesus always knew exactly how to act. Jesus never lost his cool. I mean, actually, I can't even imagine what that would look like, but he's perfectly poised. I love that. I love that.
All right, next one, discipline. Discipline means foregoing the immediate in order to guarantee the ultimate. It is saying no now in order to say yes later. It means doing the hard things now in order to reap the reward of your hard work later. And I love this passage out of 1 Corinthians. You know, it's calling us to run in such a way as to get the prize. And as followers of Christ, I think if we're living in this way, it does. It takes discipline. And I think as parents, sometimes we can
we'll sort of lose sight of this. And I think we can kind of blow it in this area, because I think sometimes we're so focused wanting our kids to be happy. You know, we want them to be happy. And it's hard to see them face difficulty or to experience hardship, and we wanted to protect them from that. But sometimes I think we need to realize we're kind of learning that actually in the marriage ministry right now. Like, the goal is not happiness, right? The goal is holiness, like in our marriage. But as far as parents, I really think the goal is to help nurture kids that are going to grow into be Christ-like men and women that are going to follow Jesus, and they're going to love God and love others well. Like, that's the goal. And it's going to take discipline along the way. And we want our kids to grow up being responsible, and we want them to be hard workers and to take things seriously. So I think you can do this a lot of different ways, you know, in different stages. When I was thinking about your stage when they're little, you're developing discipline, a lot of it can be with chores at home. I'm talking about, like, you're a member of this family and you can participate in helping our family run smoothly, you know. And I think we've got a list of chores at different ages. It might be a little bit hard to read, but there's chores. You know, Mike and I would just develop little things. You know, this is what you're responsible for at this stage: making the bed, taking out the trash, setting the table. You know, I mean, now Mason totally takes care of our whole lawn. So it looks differently at different stages, but it's putting it on their plate. And, you know, even if it's not, you know, convenient or it's not something they want to do, it's teaching them to discipline, to be in charge of something and to follow through. When they're older, you know, it can play out in academics, in sports, in theater. I mean, they're going to be exposed to things where it takes discipline. You have to put in the work and the effort, and you have to be committed even when it's hard. And so you talk about those things at the dinner table, and you talk about what you have to have discipline in your own life. One thing I think that Mike and I have talked about discipline a lot with our kids at any age, I mean, from the beginning to where they are now, is being disciplined with your time with God. Because that's something that's hard. I mean, it's hard as an adult, right, to be disciplined with that. But it's amazing if you're in the Word and you're spending time with God. We all know, like, it changes everything. So when they were little, of course, before they read, you know, it's us reading Bible stories to them. And that's how we would generally close out the night with them. And they got a little bit older, the elementary stage, I would do devotions in the morning with them at breakfast. And some of you might have seen this book. I love it. It's Jesus Calling. You know, there's the adult version, but this is the kids version. They're just really short with a little verse. But I would read it at breakfast and pray over them before they ran out to the bus. And it just started developing that habit. Like, this is a discipline that we do because it sets the tone for our day. And then as they've gotten older, you know, we challenge them. You've got to find what's going to work for you. And what are you reading? And that's, what we talk about at dinner. What are you guys reading this week? What's standing out to you in your time with God? Last night, we asked our son, "Where have you been in God's Word this week? What have you been reading?" And he's like, "I haven't." You know, and so it's like, "Why haven't you made the time?" And, of course, he first says, "I don't have the time." And we're like, "Mason, you have so much time." And he's like, "Okay, you're right, I do have the time." So, you know, it's just keeping that conversation going and talking about being disciplined and how it pays off.
And I will say this too, I think some of the worst parenting decisions are made with the desire just to make your kids happy. It sounds good. I mean, I don't want my kids to be sad, but I think, but I want my son to be happy, my daughter to be happy, therefore I'm going to let them do X, Y, and Z. And that's poor parenting. And it comes back to haunt later. And that's when I say that so often I think families make idols out of their children. It's the happiness trap. And we're doing things for the wrong reason. They might be happy in that moment, but it's not going to take them very far in life. And sometimes that means you have to be the bad guy. Okay, the next one is endurance. It says, endurance is the ability to keep going even when everything else is telling you to give up. The difficulties we face in life make us stronger, but we must persevere. Parents hurt their children when they rescue them prematurely. It's okay for your kids to struggle with something. So we've been working with kids for a really long time, really over 25 years in different roles. We have worked with kids, sometimes as in a camp setting, as a teacher, as a youth pastor, now as a family life pastor, as a children's ministry coordinator. And I honestly think kids are getting softer and more fragile. It's definitely not the opposite. I think kids are getting way more fragile. Maybe you've heard the description of a teacup kid. They look really pretty, but they're just easily broken. I'm a swim coach at Lake Ridge High School. In addition to working here, I coach at Lake Ridge High School. I also coach swimming at Stafford Hills. And I'm just amazed at the lack of just go for it, work hard, endure. And it's common to me, like as a coach, I want to make these kids better. I want them to peak and swim really fast when it comes to the dual meets and the districts. So it'll be a middle of a hard set. And I know it's a hard set, all right? But they stop and they'll say, oh, but Mike, I'm just really tired. And like, you're supposed to be. I mean, if you're not tired, you're doing it wrong. Now, go. And then I'm amazed at the number of kids that they just give up. Like, during the middle of the hard set, that's when everyone has to go to the bathroom all of a sudden. Everyone's goggles magically break at the exact same time. There's just a lack of endurance and trying to help them understand, like, there is a payoff. If you stick with it, there is a payoff. And a lot of kids, they don't have it anymore. And then we as parents blow it when we rescue them prematurely and we don't let them struggle. And it is hard to see your kids struggle. I don't want that. But I don't want to swoop in and save the day, because otherwise I'm never going to develop that strength, that endurance in my son or my daughter. And I know we do it out of love. But this is where I think about, I know we talk about the helicopter parenting. Maybe you've heard about this too. It's called the snowplow parent, who just goes before their kids and just removes all obstacles, just so their kids will find success. And they never have the opportunity to develop the endurance or the hard work, and then seeing the beauty that comes from the hard work. And I'll give you one example. I have a friend that's a teacher. She teaches third grade, and it's her policy that at the end of the day, every child has to clean their desk, leave it really neat for when they come back the next day. And there's one little boy. Evidently, that was a real challenge for him. He didn't like doing it, complained to his mom about it. Didn't want to have to leave his desk clean. So the mom calls my teacher friend and says, hey, my son really doesn't want to do this. Would it be okay if I came in at the end of school and just cleaned up his desk for him? And the teacher was just shocked and says, well, does he have any chores at home that he's responsible for? And she goes, are you kidding me? No. I like things done a certain way. And he would just mess it up, all right? I heard this story a couple years ago. I think about that kid. I mean, that is a path of disaster. I mean, developing endurance, not rescuing prematurely, and when everything in us wants to. Sometimes that's really, really hard, but letting them do the hard thing, I think, is really important.
All right, next one is courage. Courage is the resolve to do what is right, no matter what. It isn't the absence of fear, but it's choosing to act even in the midst of fear. And there's four types of courage we feel like our children need to grow in. The first one, emotional courage. That speaks to just overcoming anxieties or fears. And sometimes, you know, anxiety and fear for our kids can paralyze them. So that's, I think, a real place where we can build into our kids. Relational courage. You know, that's the courage that you need to navigate difficult friendships or difficult relationships. Moral courage. You know, the ability to stand up for your beliefs. Spiritual courage. It's living to please God rather than to please man. And so it's important, I think, to talk about these different areas of courage. And before I move on with what's written there, I was going to give an example of the emotional courage. I keep giving examples about Mason, poor Mason. But he... this is when he was kind of elementary age. He went through just serious anxiety about being away from us at night. And he would really want to spend the night, you know, with a friend. And then he would literally become paralyzed before we would take him to go. And his heart would race. I mean, it was a physical reaction. And he would be kind of almost irrational. He was so worried something was going to happen to Mike and I. And he would tell us, like, I feel like something's going to happen when I'm not here. And so we handled it terribly. We did completely the wrong thing at first. We were trying to be logical with him, and we kept saying, buddy, like, we're going to be fine. Like, don't be anxious. You know, we kept trying to just logically talk him out of his anxiousness, and it wasn't working, and this was going on and on and on. And then finally we said, we need help. And so we went to a counselor, and the counselor kind of sat Mike and I down and said, okay, yeah, you're not handling this very well. And he says, you cannot tell a kid not to be anxious. It's anxious. He's anxious. Like, telling them not to be anxious is literally doing nothing. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's so true. Like, why would I think that would work? And then
I won't go into everything now, but if you're curious, I'm happy to talk to you afterwards about. But he gave us, he says, what you need to do is you need to give him strategies to deal with the anxiety. You need to have tools so that when he does feel this way, he knows, okay, I know what to do. And so we learned these strategies. And it was amazing over time. Like, it didn't happen overnight, but over time he got to more confident in these strategies and able to handle it. And at first he would come to us and we'd kind of all do the strategies together. And eventually he said, Mom, I would do them myself. I didn't need you to help me with them. And then now I don't think he has to use the strategies anymore. So anyway, that was one area where I think we kind of entered in and talked about, you know, being courageous, and we needed help with it. That's what also I want to say this morning, is sometimes you're not going to have the answers, and you need to seek outside help and talk to other people, and that was an instance that really paid off for us. And then keep going there. It says, we have raised our kids with what we call the go-for-it attitude. From a young age, we have taught them not to live in fear, especially the fear of failure, but to go for it. They know that they don't have to win. They don't have to be the best. We just want them to try. And then we celebrate the effort. And I love this verse in Joshua because it's, I think, behind all of the courage talk that we give to our children, it's because we're not alone. Like, God is so much bigger than anything we're facing. That was actually one of the strategies for Mason. But knowing that God is with you, God is bigger than any of this, and he can be trusted. Like, that is set. What a great verse to memorize as a family. Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Like, that is a great verse for your kids to know. And there's a picture that we love as a family. This picture cracks us up. It's, like, obviously this situation, you would, like, rescue your kid before he goes down this hill on a skateboard. But we love the heart behind it. Because when looking at something really intimidating or difficult or impossible, we want our kid, we always talk about, like, just go for it. Like, go for it and do your best, and you're going to learn from it. You're going to grow from it, and God is with you, and we're behind you, but just never not try, you know, and it applies to everything. I mean, it's school and, you know, everything that kids go through that they don't want to look silly or they don't want to look bad. Like, this is such a great thing to say, you know what, just go for it, and you won't regret it. You'll always regret not going for it. So, anyway, we laugh at this picture a lot.
Actually, I look at these pictures. I had it in a notebook, like, before I would teach or preach, as a reminder to myself, like, just go for it. Because I think we all have a degree of fear. You know, it's something that holds us back. And I think for a lot of us, I mean, it's adults as well as kids, but there's this culture now, it's just a fear of failure. Like, that's the worst thing you could possibly do, is fail. And so kids, they won't try new things. And I hate that. And I don't like the kid that jumps on the other kid because they tried and then failed. I mean, we use the word fail so differently now than we ever did when I was growing up. We didn't have fail videos, you know, and so I think kids hold themselves back, but also I think parents hold their kids back. If they, like, if my child can't be successful, that might hurt their self-esteem. Therefore, I'm gonna snowplow. I don't want them to try something. Even if their heart is set on it, you direct them the other way, like, because you only want them to find a place of success, but let them figure that stuff out, you know, and it's okay to fail. And if you're an image control parent, that might be really, really hard for you to do. Okay, the next one is humility. And this is how we define that. It says, humility is not thinking too highly of yourself or thinking too little of yourself. It is simply thinking about yourself less and others more. It requires taking a genuine interest in others. Humility means having a realistic understanding of one's strengths and weaknesses. It also means seeing the good or exceptional in others and applauding it rather than being envious of it. A humble person recognizes that every good gift comes from above. And again, I would describe humility as a lost art. In a world of self-promotion, we don't see a lot of humility. But this verse actually scares me. The James 4:6 verse, God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Like, the idea that I'm living in arrogance, and that God would oppose me, like, it scares me. Like, I want to live a life of humility before the Lord and let him lift me up. But I think in our culture, we feel like we have to promote, and therefore it becomes all about us, and it's less and less about other people. I had a friend one time tell me, and he's a good friend, but these words cut. He goes, "Mike, I think your confidence borders on cocky." And that was years ago, and I've not stopped thinking about that, because I don't think there's anything wrong, clearly, with anything wrong being confident, you know, being bold or courageous, but cocky, you know, that's arrogance, and I don't want to live in that place. And again, I go to Jesus, and I think about him and the model that he has for us. Even if you're not a believer, you know, but if you look at Jesus, even purely as fiction, you would never find a better man than Jesus. He is so strong and bold and courageous in what he does. But also, he is the epitome of humility. He is so humble. He is gentle and he is kind and he is loving. So in my mind, the way I look at him, the scriptures describe him, he is the Lion of Judah, all right? But he's also the Lamb worthy to be slain. And so for me as a man, that's where I want to live. I mean, I want to embody the qualities of the lion, but also the qualities of the lamb. And in fact, I'm giving a whole talk on that Saturday to a group of men and their teenage sons. But one of the ways when Kathleen compliments me is if she sees the lion in me and she recognizes it, when she sees the lamb in me and recognizes it, and then there's humility, you know, not arrogance. And again, I want to live a life before the Lord of humility. And again, I think it's a lost art too.
All right, our last one, love. The word love has different meanings in the Bible. The highest form of love is agape love, which is self-sacrificing, unconditional love. This is how the Lord loves us, and this is how we are called by the Lord to love others. We love others with our words and our actions. It's important to encourage your children to be inclusive. By default, most children are exclusive. They focus on their friends, and they don't have eyes to see the people around them who might be in need of a friendship. This might mean reaching out to the uncool kid who is sitting by himself at lunch. This takes courage. Love is such a big topic, so I'm just going to throw out a few thoughts about it. But one thing is just, how are we modeling love to our kids? You know, they need to be so secure in the fact that we love them. And then they need to see us modeling how we're loving people outside our homes. And I think when loving your kids, I thought there's four ways that Mike and I try to use these four phrases a lot with our children, all right? And again, they may seem obvious, but saying I love you, like we can't assume that they know. And I think it's natural when they're really little to say I love you all the time, but you've got to keep it up when they're older. And I mean, literally every time my kid gets out of the car, or now that he's driving, when he leaves the house, like I always say, like, I love you. I'm constantly saying it. And they kind of are like, we know, Mom, you know. But it's important that we are saying it. I'm proud of you. Our kids are dying for feedback. They want feedback from parents. And so it's important for us to constantly be saying that we're proud of you. And not just for achievements, but for the things that matter, the character, the attitude, the heart. Like, let's praise our kids for those things that matter. I'm praying for you. Like, say it and then do it. You know, our thing is, again, in the mornings, I love praying for our kids before they go out for their day. I mean, like this morning, it was just praying for him, for God's protection, for his guidance, that he would be a light in his school, that he would feel God's presence today. You know, it's just, I think our kids feel loved when we pray for them out loud, in person. And then I'm sorry. This is a big one. You know, I think we show our kids we love them when we're willing to apologize, you know, when we're kind of putting our pride and ego below the lesson in just being humble before them and apologizing. And I also think these four things are really important to say to your spouse and for your kids to witness you saying to your spouse. And then modeling it, you know, outside your home. And this, again, could be a bazillion different things, but taking meals is a big thing that I like to do to people, and I love including my kids in it. I love saying, okay, we're making a meal for so-and-so tonight. Come help me and help me deliver it, and let's pray for the family as we drive over. Like, it's a great thing to involve your kids in. Or just serving neighbors, you know, talking, figuring out what a neighbor needs or making something for a neighbor and getting your kids. Like, at Christmas time, I always make stuff for all of our neighbors. I mean, just, you know, baked things. And then I always have Maddie and Mason deliver it, you know, and they laugh. They're like, oh my gosh, we're so old. Like, this is embarrassing. We're still doing this. And I'm like, we're loving our neighborhood. Like, get out there. So it's just encouraging them to do it. And then, of course, talking about ways they can love their peers. And again, these are, you know, sometimes at dinner, I think we miss opportunities just to bring up topics that matter. And so we typically, when we're together, we try to just
bring up a topic like, okay, what's a creative way you could love someone this week, or how could you love someone today? And we're always, that second paragraph talked about telling your kids to be inclusive, and we always talk about this, and it was really encouraging because Maddie called the other night from college, and she just recently went through Rush and joined a sorority, and she was telling us about it and said that when it came down to like the last two groups, one of the girls, the group that she ended up going with, they came up to her and they said, you know, it was an upperclassman, said, Maddie, the reason that you really stood out to us is because you didn't make it about yourself. You actually were constantly including other people in conversation or trying to introduce other people that maybe didn't know as many as you did. And we love that about you, that you were just inclusive and trying to include people. And Mike and I were like,
yeah,
you know, like, oh my gosh, like we talk about this so much. And you kind of sometimes wonder, like, do our kids even do these things when we're not around? And so it was like, it's so encouraging to us that she wanted to share that story. So that was kind of fun. But again, love is such a big topic. So that's just sort of scratching the surface, but some things to think about.
And one other thing I'll add on that. So I've done a couple different talks to dads with daughters. And in preparation for that talk, I surveyed tons of women, over 400 women. A lot of them were in the river, most of them for River West, but some of them beyond. And it was all about the relationship that they had, that the woman had with their dad when they were growing up. And the surveys were a gold mine. It was unbelievable what people were willing to share. And a lot of it was just heartbreaking. But some of the questions I asked were just about, did you know that your dad loved you? Because that is so, so important. And I just want to share a couple of the words. Like for the young girls who knew that their dads loved them, these are the words. Like, this is how it made them feel. They said they felt safe, affirmed, secure, special, important, valuable, confident, proud, respected, and cherished. Okay, those are the words that women use to describe like how they felt when they knew they were loved by their father. And then when a girl does not know that she's loved by her father, these are the words that she used: fragile, lonely, insecure, invisible, and worthless. And this is not just true of girls. I know this is true of young boys too. But of course, the problem is if your child does not feel that kind of love in your home, they will go seeking it elsewhere, and they will run into all kinds of scary, bad situations. But if they feel it at home, you're giving your kids wings and a confidence. But if they don't have it, it's setting them up for real failure. And one of the saddest things, I talked to men like this whose dads withheld affection because they thought that would make their boys stronger, and it has just the opposite effect. So just one more thing on love. I'll close this out. I know we talked a lot. We went fast. This last page, those are the eight character qualities. But one of the things I need this reminder too, that shepherding our children, it is a privilege. You know, I really believe, and Scripture tells us that children are a gift. And I know sometimes it's very, very challenging, very, very difficult. But at the end of the day, our children, you know, they are a gift. And I look at it too, like they're really, you know, they belong to the Lord more than they belong to us. You know, God will love Maddie and Mason more than we will ever be able to love our children. So we are stewards of the gift that God has given us. You know, God has given us these children. We are stewards of this gift, you know, to direct them, to guide them, support them, to love them, to serve them, to give them the wings that they'll need so when they leave our house, you know, they could take on life. And also remembering that we're creating a legacy, equipping our kids in this way and knowing that, you know, they'll have a leg up, you know, when they're raising their own kids. You know, hopefully we've given them a model that they can improve upon and continue to go with their kids too. And in relation to these eight character qualities, you know, we can't just talk about it. You know, we have to live it too, because how we live, you know, is going to mean a lot more than just, you know, what we say. So it comes back to us. You know, I think we all want kids that are going to live this way and demonstrate these wonderful character qualities, but they need to see it in us. So that's what we had. That's, you know, I hope you find this helpful, encouraging. And again, we recognize that some of this is, you might not quite be here yet, but you will be there before you know it.
You guys, thank you.
Thank you.